Hello, everyone, and welcome to Managed Healthcare Executives Meet the Board podcast series, where we feature C-suite healthcare professionals once a month, and we speak about the most important issues in healthcare. In our Meet the Board podcast series, we spotlight a member of MHE's editorial advisory board so our listeners know more about our board members and their roles in healthcare. So be sure when you tune in to listen in and learn a lot. Hi everyone, I'm Brianna Contreras, an editor with Managed Healthcare Executive. And in this month's episode of Meet the Board podcast, MHE's managing editor Peter Werwein spoke with a new member of our editorial advisory board, Marcy Shodroff, Vice President of Medical Affairs at Magellan Rx Management, a Prime Therapeutics company. In this episode, the two discussed Shodroff's career transition from clinical practice to pharmacy benefits management. Then they crossed over to highlight challenges like Medicare regulations and the growth of specialty pharmacy, focusing on oncology and GLP-1 agonists. The conversation also touched on Magellan's acquisition by Prime Therapeutics and Shodroff's focus, which remains on ensuring seamless healthcare access, especially for Medicare beneficiaries.
I did notice from your LinkedIn that you seem to hop off the clinical track and enter this world of coverage and pharmacy benefits and whatnot pretty early on in your career. I guess you went to work for a Part D plan. So I'm curious, usually people, when they make the jump, it tends to be a little bit more mid-career in my experience, and it seemed fairly early with you. So I'm curious what drew you to this side of the street, so to speak.
Sure. So after I completed my residency, as I mentioned, in 1996, and I actually did spend 15 years in clinical practice, both as a primary care physician and a hospitalist, and made the decision in 2007 to open up my own primary care private practice. And although I really loved my position as a primary care physician, I really found that the landscape, Peter, at that time of primary care during that period brought forth many unexpected challenges. And a colleague of mine happened to actually reach out to me about 4 years into that regarding an administrative role as a physician reviewer at a company called Maximus Federal Services. So I just decided that with the challenges of being out in practice, which at that time, really, most primary care physicians were affiliated with a hospital, right, or a health system, I just decided it was the right time in my career to start something new, and I made the transition to a non-clinical career. And with that, I realized that I could impact many more lives in a shorter period of time than I really could do in clinical practice. So I think that was really the motivation for changing to a non-clinical career at that time. And also, once I got into the role, I, you know, learned Medicare regulations, coverage guidelines, interacted quite a bit with CMS, understood beneficiary rights to the Medicare appeals process, and also had the opportunity to learn a little bit of legal work as I testified at administrative law judge hearings. So once I got into this role, I realized that I was learning a new set of skills that I just loved doing. And I really felt like I was impacting beneficiaries and enrollees nationwide on a larger scale.
So you were a physician reviewer. Was that a part-time thing for Maximus, or did you leave practice and go full-time there?
I left practice, actually closed up my practice and went full-time as a physician reviewer for the Part A East and West Qualified Independent Contractor at Maximus Federal Services. At the time, Maximus had several contracts, Qualified Independent Contractor contracts with CMS, of which Medicare Part A was one of them. And so I was a physician reviewer, reviewing a lot of cases that had to do with observation versus inpatient, which when the RAC, in around that time, I guess it was 2011, the RAC had discovered that that CMS had overpaid, right, for in a lot of the inpatient versus observation. So when something should have been billed, a lot of the cases should have been billed as observation rather than inpatient. So those cases were then sent to Maximus. We reviewed those and oftentimes had to go to the ALJ level as well to do administrative law judge hearings. So I was in that role with Part A for a little bit over a year, and then I moved into a medical director role of the Part D qualified independent contractor at Maximus, which they actually Maximus held that contract since the inception of Medicare Part D in 2006. So I led a team of 4 to 5 physician clinical reviewers who had actually been there since the inception. So they knew Medicare regulations inside and out. They were able to teach me, and I also taught myself about the Part D Medicare regulations. And I loved it, Peter. I mean, it was just so interesting. And that's how I got, that's really how I got into the pharmacy side of the business. And what we were doing was we were reviewing second level appeal reconsiderations of drug requests that were forwarded to us from all of the health plans and PBMs nationwide. So we were in the kind of the middle of the 5 parts of the CMS appeals process.
And what sort of issues did you mentioned observation versus inpatient review when you were a Part A reviewer? What sort of what were the what was the juicy stuff you saw as a Part D reviewer?
Oh my goodness, there were a lot. So one big issue at the time was we would get a lot of requests for a lidocaine patch. And as you know, for Medicare Part D, a drug is only a Part D drug if it has the right medically accepted indication. And at that time, many prescribers were requesting lidocaine patch for a variety of other indications outside of the 3 to 4 most common or accepted medications that accepted medically accepted indications that CMS allowed at the time. So there was a lot of appeals to the IRE that went to the ALJ afterwards as well. We also at that time there was a lot of requests for the hepatitis C drugs. That was very big during my medical directorship at the Part D IRE. And there was a lot of changing that occurred during that period of time when we were reviewing those cases. So, because there were so many new drugs that were coming out and new indications as well. So.
So after and here you're in this role, you're in the position of saying no a lot, right?
Or overturning, because by the time it gets to the IRE, oftentimes the physician decides that they have new information, or it's because of the administrative burden of this process, it's very hard for physicians to meet the turnaround times that are required by CMS in the appeals process. So they may not have had enough time to fax or send the information or have a conversation with a medical director or physician reviewer at health plan or PBM when requested, because of the busyness of their primary care practice, which I completely understand as a primary care physician myself. So.
So after this work as a reviewer, you, I believe, next step in your career was working for Magellan, right?
Yes.
And as I looked it over, you sort of were at Magellan as specialty drugs took off. I mean, and what, so how did that affect your job or affect Magellan maybe generally? I think it was, now they account for half of the pharmacy spend. Specialty used to be truly specialized, a sort of a niche thing, and it sort of has blossomed into becoming a huge part of the pharmacy spend and pharmacy activity overall.
Yes, absolutely. So you're exactly right, Peter. The specialty growth is outpacing traditional growth at more than 50% share of total spend, and the total spend in 2022 was $605 billion. So that's a lot of spend, right? And Prime MagellanRx has been a leader in managing specialty pharmacy spend on the medical benefit with solutions such as prior authorization, post-service claim edits, dose optimization, site of service, and drug wastage. And I've been involved in those programs as a medical director and VP Medical Affairs and physician reviewer, and my team has been as well. We've seen an exponential growth of specialty pharmacy, particularly in the areas of oncology, neurology, gastroenterology, and rheumatology, to name a few, which has required our organization to ensure that we have access to specialist physician reviewers who are familiar with these new drugs and are qualified to perform evidence-based reviews for prior authorization. So I would say that's what I've noticed the most in terms of how it's affected the work that I've done at MagellanRx and Prime.
Did your background as a reviewer come at, has it come into come in handy in terms of as pharma as specialty took off? I mean,
Absolutely, absolutely. That expertise has helped me to train my team, particularly so the specialty area encompasses more than one lines of business. So commercial, Medicaid, and Medicare Part B as in boy drugs are involved as well. And so that's actually required me to expand my knowledge a little more into Medicare Part B and learn about the rules and regulations from Medicare's perspective regarding coverage of those drugs. So, and that involves looking at national coverage determinations, local coverage determinations, and then if there's no national coverage determination or local coverage determination, you would then need to have a plan at like whether it's your own coverage criteria for that your client recommends or whether it's the PBM's coverage criteria that you would have as a backup. As long as you have a policy, CMS is okay with, as long as they know what you're using and you have a standard operating procedure as to what you use, they're okay with accepting in that when there's no NCD or LCD. So
do you think there's a problem with too many being drugs being classified as specialty drugs? Whenever I've poked at this question, the boundary line between what traditional and specialty seems rather fuzzy, and it depends on who's doing the defining. And I've wondered whether there might be some costs associated with things getting classified as specialty drugs.
Yeah, what you're saying could be correct, but I think you're right. It depends on who's defining specialty drugs. So, regardless of classification, our members with complicated high cost conditions are, we have members who have those high cost conditions, and they're very much impacted, right? And nearly a third of our members are covered under our specialty solution. So that's 33 million of 992 million members total. And so Prime MRX defines specialty medications as high-cost oral or injectable medications that are used to treat complex chronic conditions. And the drugs must have at least one of several characteristics to be classified as a specialty medication. So the first is that the drug has to be high cost. So you're right about that, right? It has to be priced at more than $1,000 per 30-day supply. And this may include self-administered injectables, professionally administered injectables, infusions also. Secondly, they could be also need to be or could be high complexity. So those are biology-based medications that structurally mimic compounds that are found within the body. They could be orphan or ultra-orphan drugs. And the third characteristic so that they would may need to have, right, and to be classified as a specialty medication would be that it would be need to be a high touch medication. So the medication requires temperature control or other shipping or handling requirements, or the drug may need special management by a pharmacist or a physician who specializes in the treatment of the drug, et cetera. Or the drug may require ongoing member education to discuss side effects, ensure compliance, and assist with education regarding techniques for injection.
So, are there any particular classes or diseases or especially drug technology that you are presenting new challenges or problems for you? Of course, cell and gene therapies in the news now, and that presents a whole set of issues in terms of payment. But I'm just wondering, going into 24, whether there's something or an area that you're there's just that you're really having to grapple with, because it's presenting some novel issues or maybe just existing issues that are just really hard to deal with.
Yeah, and I think what you just mentioned about sickle, about cell and gene therapies, for example, like the sickle cell gene therapies recently, and that's something that our organization is definitely focusing on. The combined price tag and prevalence of these conditions has really the potential to dramatically impact the specialty pharmacy spend and trends for plans. Interestingly enough, Peter, I just learned about that several healthcare policy watchers are proposing a CMS Part E national benefit for certain cell and gene therapies, which I found very interesting. And so, all stakeholders are really going to need to look at innovative and appropriate solutions. This particular Part E national benefit would allow Americans to receive equitable access to new treatments and may assist in decreasing the cost of the drug. So that I just thought that was interesting to think about. And it may be for all it may actually be for everybody, not just Medicare beneficiaries. So I think cell and gene therapy is definitely at the top of the list. Oncology is another area that we've been focusing on, and I can just give you a couple of examples. So Keytruda's expanded indication to include triple negative breast cancer has been a main driver of spend increase and advanced endometrial carcinoma as well. And it's kept it as a top driver across all lines of business with an increase in PMPM spend of 57.5% commercial, 12.5% Medicare, and 19.1% Medicaid from the previous year. Neulasta continues to remain a top used drug within the oncology support agents and long-acting colony stimulating factors, despite utilization trends just dropping by as much as 10%. Neulasta is still capturing 65% of market share across all lines of business, likely due to the Onpro on-body delivery system. So the other thing that I want to mention too is just the GLP-1s. So we've been, focusing on that over the last year, and we'll continue to focus on that going into 2024. And with obesity being such a highly prevalent condition with risk for so many other conditions, the utilization of GLP-1 agonists has really substantially impacted costs for payers and patients. So that's something we're talking a lot about at our organization. And then finally, just wanted to mention, as it impacts the work that my team is doing, just the regulatory changes to utilization management that we've noticed over the last couple of years and going into 2024 as well. Depending on the states, there's impacted elements may include prior authorization turnaround times. Step therapy guidelines can vary from one state to another. And also the types of credentialing of physician reviewers when they're reviewing prior authorizations. So making sure that certain states may want to make sure that the prescriber is, I'm sorry, that the reviewer is of the same or similar specialty match and or the same or similar license match where the patient is receiving the care. So those are things that, we're thinking about at Prime MRX as we continue to execute our utilization management programs on behalf of our health plan clients.
Now, you're a Magellan person, and Prime Therapeutics purchased Magellan last year.
Yes.
So how has did that acquisition change your title and or your duties?
So it hasn't changed my title. I have a really strong team of a medical director and physician clinical reviewer in a variety of specialties who with me are bringing their expertise to Prime and Magellan Rx. I've also had the opportunity, Peter, to bring my Medicare expertise to the 1.8 million Medicare members that Prime brings to our combined organization and to work with new colleagues who at Legacy Prime who have years of Medicare experience. We're collaborating as one team, learning from each other quite a bit. And the other thing that I've enjoyed having the opportunity to work on in the last year has been on health equity in our combined new organization. And I've also had the opportunity to serve as a member of Prime's Diversity and Inclusion Council over the last year. And I don't know if you heard this, but Prime's D&I efforts were just recently recognized by Newsweek magazine last week. So that was something that we're very, very proud of as well.
And I guess Rochester to Minnesota, you can compare cold weather tales, right?
We certainly do. Although I think Minnesota seems to be a little bit colder.
It sounds all great, but as you know, PBMs are in the news a lot, can come under a lot of scrutiny, have come under a lot of criticism. So when you heard that a PBM was going to buy you, did you maybe have a little bit of misgiving?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Prime MRX has a lot of advantages and value that it brings to health plan clients, employer groups, and consumers. And the first, and I think the most differentiating, Peter, is that we are not a publicly traded company. We're privately owned by 19 not-for-profit Blues plans who are also our clients. And we do have a mutual interest in providing the same care that we would want for our loved ones. We want to make sure that the member is getting the right drug at the right time in a safe manner. And we have a lot of access to data on both the medical and pharmacy benefits, right? Which helps us to understand the whole patient and improve the overall outcomes of our clients' members. For example, I'll give you an example of our guided health program uses integrative data to help physicians and members to make better decisions for the health of their patients.
There is some concern out there about PBMs and owning specialty pharmacies, that it's the sort of vertical integration that can lead to that entity grabbing revenue off the supply chain. It's I haven't heard of this general criticism directed at Private Magellan, but they're sort of concerned about this sort of vertical integration and sort of broad strokes. I'm curious what you would say to people who are concerned that the supply chain is getting increasingly controlled by single entities.
So Prime Magellan Rx is not incentivized to promote pharmacies we own. We work with our customers to help them choose the best and most affordable paths for their business and their members. An example of this is Integrated Rx. Integrated Rx is when members can fill certain disease-specific prescriptions, mostly in oncology right now, from an in-house pharmacy or from their doctor's office. And this helps the provider and the pharmacist communicate directly, creating a more cohesive care team and ultimately providing a better member and provider experience. We found that the program has a 95% satisfaction rating from its participants. And because we are conflict-free, we're able to really be innovative and have consumer-forced, focused solutions.
Do you run into problems with patients when they're on a specialty med that they feel over-messaged, that they are working with their provider, but they're also getting these questions from the specialty pharmacy? Have you run into that? And are there issues with sort of too many cooks in the kitchen? For these patients.
No, I have not run into that, but I can tell you about our program that we have, MRX Cares program, Prime MRX Cares program, where we have nurses who actually work with the patients when they get their specialty drugs from our specialty pharmacy, and they are able to help to manage any side effects or questions that the members have. And they do develop a working relationship with the patients. And I think, you know, it's been very, very beneficial to the patients, because these are, as I mentioned earlier, these are high touch medications that are hard to self-administer and can have significant side effects. And I think members really want that connection with clinicians who can really help them to make sure they're on the right path to adherence to the drug, so that their condition will be managed the best that it can be. So.
There's been a lot of discussion about digital therapeutics, and Prime has had some interest in prescription digital therapeutics. I'm not sure whether that's something that you've got involved in, whether it's a role in, been a something you've dealt with in your role at Magellan, and if it is, do you have any thoughts about the future of incorporating digital therapeutics or prescription digital therapeutics into this realm?
Sure. Yeah. Prime MRX does have some digital therapies on our formulary, so we greatly understand the value that digital apps do bring to consumers. Prime and MRX does take a consumer-centric approach, and we work with the members to meet them where they are and how they want their care delivered. For example, we do have a real-time benefit check product where members can see their personalized benefit information that helps them understand the cost of their prescriptions, Peter, according to their plan in real time, and they can make choices that work for them. And all alternate drug and pharmacy network suggestions are member specific, are based on the member's benefit plan, their form, the formulary, the network, and the accumulator balance at that point in time. On the horizon, there is AI and other digital tools which we know will have an increased demand in the healthcare sector.
So, what are the one or two things that you're looking most forward to or dreading in 24 in terms of just, your the challenges that had this year, the what's what's right on your foremost on your plate?
So I would say, with my Medicare background and the integration of our organizations, and as I mentioned, I now have the opportunity to serve, 1.8 million new beneficiaries, with our combined organization. I'm very passionate about Medicare and wanting to ensure that all Medicare beneficiaries, both our nation's seniors and patients with special health needs, have a seamless experience accessing high quality, safe, and equitable healthcare now and in the future. And so I want to really work very hard to make sure that that is happening for our health plan clients' members going into 2024 and beyond.
Well, why don't we leave it there? I'll be interested in talking to you about this in the future about this Medicare population that you're dealing with, and maybe also particularly the challenges of cell and gene therapy as increasing number of those get approved and covered, and how Prime and I guess I have to start saying Prime Magellan.
Correct.
Is going to deal with a fascinating, if costly, part of American healthcare.
I look forward to that. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this month's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit us at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.